Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Brad Parks, who's out with his latest novel, The Last Act. In this story, an out-of-work Broadway actor goes undercover as an inmate at a federal prison at the request of the FBI to gain intelligence from a banker inmate about the location of some documents on the outside that could bring down a Mexican drug cartel. Brad, when I first read the plot of this book and kind of figured out where it was going, I thought back to a story I read in the newspaper a few years ago about how ill-prepared lay people are to act as undercover informants for law enforcement. So you send them in to do undercover drug buys and things like that. They're really not protected. How did you research this aspect of the book for a normal person creating a new identity in this situation?
Well, yeah, in this case, it's very easy. I am a normal person, so I imagine myself bumbling through these same kind of situations. One of the things I enjoy about Tommy Jump, who is the protagonist of The Last Act, the out-of-work actor you've mentioned, is he is this ordinary guy. And, you know, so I think which makes him different from a lot of thriller protagonists who are these superheroes who can break your jaw by looking at you, that sort of thing. Tommy isn't that. He is a 5'4" out-of-work actor, which I think in terms of native abilities to go undercover and all that stuff, he's about the same as a 6'1" author in that regard. So it wasn't a case of research as much as just having an imagination, I think.
Well, the name Tommy Jump, it's such a great name. How many metamorphoses did that name go through before you settled on that one?
So actually, it's funny how it started. I will often auction a character name for charity. And in this case, I had auctioned off the name Barb Jump. To support a library in Virginia, and I love the name Barb Jump. I say it's the combination of a sharp object with an action verb. So I made Barb Jump the mother, and then I'm thinking, okay, this kid's going to be an actor, and by the way, a child actor. So he's got to have a kind of bouncy child actor kind of name. And somehow I just came up with Tommy Jump, and it was perfect. And from the moment I had it, there was going to be no other name for Tommy Jump. He was just Tommy Jump.
Well, the life of any actor, and particularly one who's a child star, can be very hand-to-mouth as they age. Why'd you choose Broadway actor as opposed to TV or movie?
You know, I think it was more accessible to me. I'm myself a theater guy. I've done really, really bad community theater, Brian. Don't get me confused for any kind of former Broadway star. But I love the stage, and I think there's something about the stage that is poignant for me as a writer, because really, as a writer, I think of myself as being on stage. It's just I can't see the audience who's reading me, but I'm constantly trying to keep them entertained, and I think having done a little bit of live theater, you always kind of have that antenna up of, like, is my audience enjoying this? Are they not? And it's the same. So the writing and acting, I think, live acting anyway, have a lot in common. And so that was just kind of one of those ways I could hook into Tommy Jump and bring him to life as a character.
Well, and then I suppose if you picked anybody with any notoriety, they would be recognized in the prison, right?
Yeah, that's another problem. Yeah, so Broadway actors are like authors, somewhat anonymous. I always say that, you know, people will ask, you know, is it difficult being an author? You know, are you recognized? It's like, no. You know, James Patterson, who's the best-selling author in the English language, could walk through an airport, and I almost guarantee nobody would recognize him, even as they were sitting there with his book in their laps and his photo on the back dust jacket. So I think it's the same for Tommy. It's a very low chance that he's going to be recognized.
A lot of this book takes place inside a prison, and I think people are fascinated by prisons just because it's something so out of the realm of the ordinary of what we normally see. But what'd you do to capture that realism?
So, you know, in this case, actually, it is a minimum security prison, which is an important distinction. I set the book at the Federal Corrections Institute in Morgantown, West Virginia, which is a real place, and I really went there and really took a tour and really kind of dove into the lifestyle there. And the reason I made it minimum security is, one, I needed there to be a certain amount of interaction between the characters. The premise of the novel being that Tommy Jump has to go off to prison and become essentially best friends with Mitchell Dupree, this banker who has these documents that can lead to the downfall of this cartel. So I needed Tommy and Mitch to be able to become buddies. And they couldn't do that if they were being locked in their cells for 23 hours a day. So that was part of it. I think I didn't want the book to necessarily be about the brutality of prison. Prisons can be incredibly dehumanizing places. And I think in the minimum security environment, it's a little less intimidating in that respect. Like, actually, at FCI Morgantown, fun little fact, there are no walls. There's actually nothing to keep the inmates from wandering off except for this. If they wander off and they get caught, when they return to prison, they are not going to the minimum security club-fed type prison. They are going to a medium or maximum security prison, which there's a line in the book about how it's basically like going backwards 10,000 years in evolution. So the prison is more in the background, I think, as a threat, at least until it's not anymore. But that gets awfully deep into the book, so I don't want to spoil that for people.
Well, the people you met at FCI Morgantown, are we talking white-collar criminals for the most part?
Yeah. So to be at FCI Morgantown, you have 10 years or less on your sentence, and you are a nonviolent offender. So it's still a lot of drugs, because any prison anywhere is mostly drugs. But yeah, you do have some white-collar, some tax cheats. You've got some insider traders. You've got people of that ilk. And so, interestingly, FCI Morgantown, I think it avoids a lot of the prison tropes that you'll see. There are no gangs. There's none of the racial segregation. Like, you have black people and brown people and people of all different backgrounds eating together at dinner. So it makes it a little bit more of a humane place to be. But it's still prison. Let's be clear. It's not a fun place.
Well, this is a standalone book, and oftentimes standalone plots tend to encompass many aspects. But this plot is very, very tight. How did your background as a newspaper reporter help you tighten up your writing?
Well, I think as a newspaper guy, if you back in the day anyway, when it was the print newspaper predominated, your story was going to have about 200 words or maybe 150 words on the cover before it jumped into the inside. And my goal was always, I am going to try to hook you in that 150 words to force you to open up the middle of the paper to continue reading the rest of the story. And I think that discipline just kind of crossed me over into the novel writing, where I almost treat every chapter the same way. If I haven't hooked you in that first little bit, I'm going to assume you're going to wander away. So there is wonderful discipline to being a newspaper reporter that does transfer quite nicely into novels, I think.
We're talking with Brad Parks about his latest novel, The Last Act. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Brad, your journalism career spans several newspapers, and including The Washington Post, which is a paper I read every day. What made you leave journalism altogether? Was it simply a sign of the times that newspapers were starting to contract?
Yeah, I mean, Brian, we don't want to get too far into this because, then I'm going to have to wander off and find a bar somewhere. basically, I was in my early 30s, and my wife and I had just had our first child. And I was looking around. I was actually not at the Washington Post anymore. I was at a newspaper in New Jersey, the Newark Star-Ledger, which is a large, once thriving newspaper that I could read the writing on the walls. And like, this thing was going to die sometime. I was kind of guessing about 15 or 20 years, something like that. Which, when that little baby we were just starting to nurture would just about to be to head to college, and that seemed like a very, very bad time for Daddy to lose his job. So it was one of those jump before you're pushed kind of a thing. I love journalism, but it just wasn't going to get me through to the 65 years in a rocking chair. There was no way I could see that happening, and unfortunately, that's playing out. The business model for newspapers out there is just broken for the most part.
And then you choose a career that's writing, which is also very, very risky, right?
Right. How dumb am I? Right. I looked around and said, okay, what's the only thing less certain than newspapers? Oh, books. but it's really it's been a wonderful ride, and frankly to get to tell stories for a living is such a privilege and a pleasure. It is something that I can overlook some of the uncertainties that go with it.
You're 9 novels into your writing career now, your novelist career. You won major awards. And as you write, I mean, what's the pressure like to have those expectations on you? People are expecting a great novel from you every time.
Well, I can guarantee you that whatever expectations they have of me, they dim compared to my own expectations of myself. So, you know, I really don't think about that. I don't think about the outside pressure. I mean, it really is for me the aesthetic of each book has to be better than the last book, and pushing myself to make sure I live up to that standard. You know, and the awards are a funny thing, Brian, because, you know, you like the Nero Award is one of the awards I've won, and it's named after Nero Wolfe, one of the great characters in fiction, and they gave me this little bust, right, this handsome bust of Nero Wolfe, and you can set it next to the keyboard, Brian, and Nero doesn't type a word for me. I mean, he's worthless. That's a funny way of saying basically, you know, every day you're just another guy who's sitting down to write. And all of that other stuff about awards or expectations, that is so far in the distance. Maybe it's just I'm a typical guy, I can compartmentalize, but it's really about the story and the scene I'm writing, and I'm somehow just able to focus in on that and ignore any other distractions there may be.
Well, you've written standalones, you've written series. Who makes the determination as to whether your next book's going to be part of a series or a standalone?
So that's obviously something done with the publisher and me. You know, my first six books were an investigative newspaper reporter from New Jersey, which of course I used to be an investigative newspaper reporter from New Jersey. But as I left New Jersey, we live in Virginia now, I kind of found myself getting further and further away from that milieu. And, you know, I haven't been an investigative newspaper reporter in 10 years, and the business has certainly changed a lot since then. And I think I also just found myself wanting to tell different stories. I mentioned earlier, we now have kids, and a lot of my stories revolve around children and around families, and because those are the real driving forces in my life. So it's really, I'm not sure how conscious it is, you know, the decision of standalone, or, you know, it's, I guess what I'm saying is it's not like we line up a business model where we're saying, okay, this versus this. It's really, you know, what story is grabbing me at a particular moment, and then tell that story to the best of my ability.
Are you still writing at Hardee's?
Brian, you've done your research. Yes. Now, do they have Hardee's in Iowa?
Yes, they do.
I'm sure about that.
We have a couple
okay,
of them here in town.
Because there's a dividing line some point in the country where you switch from being Hardee's to Carl's Jr.
Right.
I just didn't want to be talking to a Carl's Jr. audience when I, you know, in the language of Hardee's. So yes, I spend about 4 hours every day in the corner table of a Hardee's restaurant, which has just become my writing sanctuary. They have free refills on Coke Zero. What more could I need?
Well, and, you know, the thing is, you're writing at a fast food place, but you do this physically fit regimen when you're writing, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I'm a former sports writer, and I always say I treat myself like an athlete in season, you know, where that 4 hours a day I'm in the chair, that's my game, right? That is game time, and that is what, and I really try to spend the other 20 hours making sure I maximize myself in those 4 hours. And part of that for me is exercise and eating right, because I know if I exercise and eat well, I'll sleep better, and I know if I sleep better, I'll write better. So it leads to this rather boring aesthetic existence, I suppose. But, you know, I think as a writer, and I know you've interviewed a number of wonderful writers on your show, any one of them will tell you, if you find something that works, you stick with it. And for me, running, swimming, lifting, and eating salads is part of what works.
Well, a lot of the novels begin with a quote. This book has one from the musical Pippin, which I love. But was that a quote you had in mind when you started, or did that come later?
You know, that came later. And of course, the quote, I don't have it in front of me right now, but, it comes from, you know, that beautiful song in Pippin, "Everything has its season, everything has its time," and it's, you know, "Corner of the Sky," and which is just a favorite song of mine. And really, yeah, it was at some point in the middle of the book, I realized that, gosh, Tommy Jump really is a character who's trying to find his own corner of the sky. And so I think that's when I went back and made it the first quote.
All right. Well, the book is The Last Act. It's a new novel from Brad Parks. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Brad, just a fantastic book, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Brian, thanks very much for having me on.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Gotta find my corner of the sky.